This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
One pick and a Super Bowl champ with a man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Cut him every trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time, we provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And a good April the 6th, 2021 to you and yours. It is DCR with you right here on 98.7 ESPN. I knew it was going to be a busy sports day. It was even busier than we anticipated. A horrendous national championship game. A horrendous start for the Mets. A beautiful game for the Yankees all around. Even Giancarlo Stanton delivering in a huge spot. A really good yet difficult loss for the Knicks last night. But the one thing that we didn't realize was Sam Darnold was going to be traded yesterday. I almost wish they had waited to trade him on a day there wasn't so much going on. But we have a lot to do. Here's what I'm suggesting. We'll say good morning to the guys in a moment. Here's what I'm suggesting. Let's just open up the phone lines. And if you want to go Knicks-Nets, have at it. You want to go national championship game, have at it. You want to go Mets and blowing it from the bullpen again yesterday, have at it. I mean, anywhere you want to go, 800-919-3776. Let's say good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. I guess you're going with the sports smorgasbord formula this morning, huh?
There's so much going on. I'm honestly, and I'm being sincere when I say this, I'm overwhelmed with the amount of stuff we have going on this morning. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we do have a lot of stuff to get into, but I'm excited about it, man. A great sports day yesterday, and we're here to break it down to a fine powder. How are you guys doing this morning?
So, Schefter, by the way, he's going to join us at 7:15. Mike Tenenbaum at 7:35. Rick already, he's very feisty this morning. He already yelled at me. I think you made the right decision. I think I talked you into the right move, and you're very upset because of it, though.
No, it was an awful decision.
It was
and
right
I blame
move.
You because I feel terrible.
Tell Chris why you're upset, and Chris will take my side, I believe.
No, because you challenged me. You said you got to. I mean, you have to at least stay up until the end of the Mets game, and then as much of the national championship game as you can. So I did exactly that. I stayed up all the way through the Mets game, shut the TV off at the end of the first half of the national championship game, which wasn't very good, and could not have had a worse sports night. Period. Great afternoon. Ate more stuffing than I think is humanly possible yesterday. All geared up, had the TVs going, and then between the Mets, the Knicks, didn't get a chance to see an undefeated Gonzaga. I mean, the whole thing was just awful.
So you're blaming Dave Rothenberg because he suggested that you change your game plan with your sports viewing last night.
For what was one of the biggest sports nights we've had in, maybe the biggest sports night we've had since the pandemic.
Yeah.
And you're blaming me.
Yeah, I'm blaming you. Because I should have shut the TV off when I wanted to, when they took out DeGrom after 77 pitches for some reason. Everything was good. Defense was great. DeGrom was dealing up at 102 miles an hour.
So what you'd rather do is just go to bed feeling like your Mets had a chance to close the door on the Phillies and sleep well and then wake up to the disappointment rather than to go to bed with the disappointment.
Yes. For the life of me, I don't understand how you could do that.
I actually understand that. I actually get where Rico's coming from with that one.
I actually do not understand how you could be up 2-0 at the end of 7 and be like, all right, let me just shut it down and go to sleep. I don't physically, like emotionally, I don't understand how someone could do that.
Well, Dave, because in his mind, with the outing that Jacob DeGrom already had, not just what he did from the mound, but what he did at the plate, like the game was already done. Like there was no doubt about what the outcome was going to be. So he gets to go to bed in a good mood, knowing that his team in game one of the regular season took care of their business.
Well, you went to bed thinking the game was won?
No, would it have been nice to turn the TV off after 7 when Jacob DeGrom, I mean, would have went through 7 because he was cruising at that point? That would have been nice, but that wasn't the case. They took him out after 6. I stayed up, which means now I cut 2 extra hours off my sleep. So not only now am I exhausted, but I'm also disappointed as opposed to fully rested and disappointed. I got worst case scenario right now.
I think you made the right decision. I would defend you. I would fight for you. with the decision that you made yesterday.
No, it wasn't the right decision. Rico, it wasn't the right decision. You should have went to bed thinking that the Mets won that game last night. The Gonzaga had the possibility of an undefeated season. You should have went to bed with all of those great sports feels and then woke up to the carnage
morning. To desperation and misery. Yeah, that's not what you want. I think you made the right decision. I stand by it. All right. We have a lot to get into. So well, let's spend a couple minutes on this, and then we'll move on. And we'll probably filter back here a couple times during the show. But last night's championship game was horrendous. It was non-competitive. I mean, maybe we're talking about the wrong team being an all-time great because Baylor hammered Gonzaga. They destroyed them. They looked like if they played 10 times, Baylor would have won that game 9 times. That was a terrible championship game.
But it was exactly what Jay Will said it was going to be, right? I mean, he said that the defenders from Baylor, all of those guards, were going to be in the hip pocket of the backcourt of Gonzaga, and they were going to extend those guys a little bit further than they'd like to be, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, offensively, they pounded the offensive glass. I think they had 16 offensive rebounds, and they knocked down open shots for the perimeter. They had 10 three-point makes. So, I mean, Baylor went in there with a game plan to kind of exploit some of the weaknesses of Gonzaga, and they executed at a really high level, Dave. I mean, that was a phenomenal game, and their coach, Scott Drew, talked about it. He said they executed, you know, at one of the highest levels that he had seen all season, and he felt like the competition brought out the best in his team. That's exactly what played out on that stage last night.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, Jalen Suggs getting early foul trouble didn't help, but, I mean, that Baylor team, I mean, between their defense, which was suffocating.
Oh, my God. Suffocating. They destroyed Timmy. I thought Timmy was the most important player for Gonzaga this tournament, and he was non-existent last night.
Well, they couldn't play man defense. I mean, they couldn't keep Baylor's guards in front of them. They couldn't do it. I mean, they decided to go into a zone late in that first half and actually kind of clawed their way back into it and cut it to 10. But, I mean, that was, you're right. I mean, if that, and I don't know how much of it is due to the fact, and I asked Jay Will this question, is that, you know, sometimes when you see a team have that kind of win where Suggs hits that big three, like in a closely contested game like that, like emotionally it takes something out of you, and you don't, a lot of teams aren't able to bounce back. I don't know if that was the case. But, I mean, just what Baylor did to them, man. They were more physical. They crushed them.
I guess we got our one game, right? We got the Gonzaga-UCLA game, and that was it. Because last night's game was terrible. I mean, really, when you think about it, that game was over 4 minutes in. It was. It was 11-2, 4 minutes in. It was never competitive. They never got within 9 after that. It was not a fun game to watch. The only reason you kept it on is because it was the national championship game, and you kept thinking, well, maybe they'll go on a run, and they're such a good team. But that was not a good game. It was a terrible basketball game last night.
I wonder what would have happened if these two teams were supposed to play earlier on this season.
Correct.
If it would have benefited Gonzaga to get a chance to play, even if they had lost to Baylor during the season, they weren't going into this tournament undefeated. I wonder if it would have helped in the grand scheme of things to see. What they were going to be up against as far as, you know, the athleticism, the physicality, that kind of defense. Because Jay Will was right. I mean, everything he told us yesterday was what we saw last night.
He couldn't have been right about Illinois, huh? He had to be right about this Gonzaga losing to Baylor.
Who ended up winning the pool, Dave?
Me. Destroyed you guys.
No, you did not win.
I destroyed you guys. That's all that matters.
But I was so right, by the way. I knew not to pick Gonzaga to win the thing. I knew they weren't going to win this thing. Now, I picked Illinois, with aided by Jay Williams.
That's much better. Yeah, much better. Pick Illinois. At least Gonzaga ended up in the championship game.
I get it, but my point was I was correct to not go with Gonzaga to win the whole thing. I just picked the wrong team to win it. Had I chosen Baylor, I would be doing these reads about how I won the whole thing, even though you didn't come close to winning the whole thing. You just beat 4 other schmoes on your show.
I didn't just beat. I mean, throttled. I did to you guys what Baylor did to Gonzaga last night. It's pretty much what I did to you guys. That's what I did. I'm Baylor in this situation, uh-huh. And you, Canty, RJ, and Santiago or Gonzaga. High hopes, and then championship, just get a beatdown.
But you didn't win the championship, Rico.
It was my championship.
No, listen,
I set certain goals. Yeah. This was the goal. Just
so your
guys,
goal is tremendous mediocrity. But beat the other losers around me. That's
exactly
what you're looking for?
Correct.
All right, well, then you know what? Mission accomplished, yes. Congratulations, Rick.
I don't know how you guys feel about this stuff. I mean, Dave's a Georgetown fan. You know, Chris, obviously, Virginia, who had a tremendous tournament.
Come on, man, really? That's what we're going to do?
After you defended him with a stupid point about how he's upset for staying up late last night.
You know, my alma mater, Harvard, decided, you know, Ivy League was canceled. But, I mean, I think Canty would agree with me. When you have a chance, now we got no dog in the fight. We just wanted to see a good game. But ultimately, I wanted to see history made. Like, this bums me out.
Yeah, I was rooting for Gonzaga as well.
Like, it would have been nice to see it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the last time this happened was 76. It would have been nice in my lifetime to see an undefeated champion.
Yeah, I don't know about that, though, Rico. I found myself last night kind of rooting for Baylor to pull off the upset just because everybody said before the tournament even kicked off that Gonzaga was going to waltz through this thing. And after seeing UCLA come so close and to have that kind of heartbreak, it was just kind of like, I don't know, man. I wanted to root for the underdog. I love a good underdog story.
That game shouldn't have been that close to half.
When it was 10, I was thinking to myself, boy, to play that poorly and be dominated to that extent and be down only 10, maybe they have a run. But instantly it was back to 15 right away in the second half.
Jared Butler was awesome coming out of halftime, too.
Killed him, knocking down those two threes.
Those were huge shots.
How much does it take away from Gonzaga's season? When you think about this Gonzaga team now, do you think about, well, you know what, they just couldn't get it done, or they had an amazing year that just couldn't get it done?
You won't think about this Gonzaga team, Dave. You won't.
So this team is that. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Suggs, you'll be like, oh, Jalen Suggs went there. Oh, yeah, that was that Gonzaga team that almost went undefeated. But it would be it's an afterthought. They're a footnote.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens. When you don't finish the drill, when you don't win the chip, that's what happens.
Yeah, and they weren't even close. Like, at least New England. New England was right there. Took a miracle of all miracles to not win that game. Gonzaga was pummeled last night.
Yeah, that felt like if me and you, Dave, went down to threw our headbands on and went down to Rucker for a quick run. What it would look like.
We could bring Timmy with us and Kispert. They all have headbands.
Oh, man.
He was completely taken out of the game last night, too. All right, so Sam Darnold, 800-919-3776. I wish it didn't happen yesterday, a day where there was so much going on. But, Chris, your initial thought when you saw that Darnold was dealt for a 6 this year and then a 2-4 in next year's draft to Carolina was?
I was surprised that this move happened before the draft. Like, I thought that, you know, the deal that Joe Douglas was looking for clearly wasn't out there in terms of being able to get the draft pick compensation this year. So I just felt like it made more sense for them to wait. But I guess Carolina kind of put a clock on this thing and said, you know, we want to know what's going to happen with our quarterback position before we go into the draft. And I think that's what kind of stepped things up in terms of these negotiations. And then the reality is this. Like, the places for Sam Darnold to go were starting to dry up. So it made sense that if you were going to draft Zach Wilson with the second overall pick, if you're moving away from Sam being your starter, if there's a deal out there that makes some sense, then go ahead and pull the trigger. I thought it was fair compensation for the player. You get a second-round pick next year, fourth-round pick next year, and a sixth-round pick in this year's draft. I mean, that gives the Jets 21 draft picks over the course of the next 2 years. I felt like it was a solid deal for both sides.
Sam Darnold screws poor Teddy Bridgewater again. Poor Teddy Bridgewater is going to get traded now.
Yep.
But it felt like there was only two teams really left. I mean, it felt like it was Denver and Carolina were the two teams that had question marks to that position. And Carolina, I mean, been hell-bent on trying to upgrade that position. I mean, they were one of the teams that were heavily interested in Deshaun Watson.
Well, we heard they
also
were all
Matt Stafford.
They would do whatever it takes to get him.
Yeah, and Matt Stafford.
Yeah, we're on Stafford, yep.
Listen, I mean, Matt Rhule, apparently when he interviewed for the job, when he should have been hired, which was a humongous mistake by the Jets, actually had a call with Sam Darnold. And it was during that phone call that, you know, Sam asked about, you know, culture and things that he would bring, not scheme, but like culture and things that he would bring to the building, which I guess really impressed Matt Rhule. So, you know, Sam's been on Matt Rhule's radar. They had a chance to make the deal. And it sounds like, you know, early on in this process, going back and forth, they were offering, you know, something that Joe Douglas kind of laughed at. And then, you know,
was it a fourth round pick, I think?
Yeah. And now as time progressed, they realized, okay, we want to solidify this position because we'd like to trade Teddy Bridgewater and have things, you know, straightened out before we get into this draft. They went up to the sixth, the second, and the fourth, which, I mean, Joe Douglas, I mean, I think he did good, but ultimately, does it all really matter? Like, if number two doesn't work out, if Zach Wilson doesn't work out, none of it matters.
That's all that matters. I mean, if assuming they take Wilson, if he turns out to be really good, you're going to win. If he turns out to be really bad, it doesn't matter that you got a two, a four, a six, could have gotten, you know, multiple twos. It's not going to make a difference. You need, the one thing you need if you're the Jets is for that pick at two, your future quarterback, to be a big-time player. And if he is, then the Jets fans will be very happy. And if he's not, you're going to be looking at a long time of rebuilding this thing.
Well, Dave, he's got to be at least better than Sam Darnold is with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady down in Carolina, right? I feel like that's kind of the bar. Like, that would be...
Down the road,
that,
yes.
That would be the thing that would justify Joe Douglas and Rob Saleh making the decision to move off of Sam and to go in a different direction. Now, we all know from a practical standpoint, it probably makes more sense that if you're going to live and die with the quarterback as a general manager, you'd like it to be the guy that you drafted as opposed to the regime prior. And so that's why I felt like all along that they were going to take a quarterback at two. How often are you going to be this high in the draft with this kind of talent at the top of the draft at that quarterback position? Doesn't happen every single year. And so I just felt like it was the perfect storm of circumstances for the Jets to be able to transition from a guy that they took with the third overall pick 3 years ago.
Yeah, I just don't know. Like, all these people that say, you know, you should have kept Sam, like even Rich Samini, keep Sam and, you know, trade back, accumulate all these extra first-round picks and everything else, and then build your team that way. Yeah, that sounds great. Like, I understand. Everyone loves the lottery tickets and everything else. But, I mean, this is Joe Douglas's life. This is his livelihood. It's easy to sit here when there's no repercussions for you and say, oh, yeah, trade back. Take one chance. Take another year with Sam and see how that works out. This is Joe Douglas. If Joe Douglas is wrong, like, he's probably not going to get another job as a GM in the National Football League.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Did the Jets get a good return for Sam Darnold? Here is Rich Samini.
I thought the actual compensation was okay. I mean, I thought maybe they would have got a little more this year. They're only getting the six this year, but they do get a two next year. And so considering the way the market's dried up, like you said, Don, teams of, you know, the Ryan Fitzpatricks of the world and Andy Daltons have found homes in recent weeks. So I don't think there were a lot of suitors for Sam. In fact, you know, I think Carolina might have been the only one, and talks didn't really ramp up until over the weekend, I was told. So the compensation, I think, is fair for both teams. It's just that you get back to the bigger issue where I thought the Jets could have gone in a different direction. But that's just my opinion.
I thought they did fine, what they got in the trade. And he might have thought they should have gone in a different direction, but never once did I think that's what they were going to do. I knew that this is what they were going to do. So I'm not surprised at all by this deal, but I think they did okay. I mean, a 2, a 4, and a 6, you're not going to be horrified by getting that in return for a quarterback that never lived up to any of the billing that he had.
No, I think they'll be fine, Dave. I mean, you got plenty of ammunition the next couple of years to rebuild this roster. I mean, they've got 21 draft picks, Dave. So everybody that's in the camp of trade the number 2 overall pick and stockpile draft picks and stay with Sam, I mean, how many draft picks do you need? Like, I just think it gets to a point where it's just like a little bit overkill when it comes to these draft picks. Like, you got to turn the draft picks into players. But, you know, Joe Douglas has plenty of ammunition to rebuild this roster. And now he gets to rebuild it with a quarterback that he believes can be the franchise guy for the next decade plus.
Here's the thing. I understand what Rich is saying, because there's a lot of people that call in and say the exact same thing.
Sure.
You ride one more year with Sam Darnold, you don't pick up his fifth-year option, see how it goes, new coaching staff, talent around him, and then, you know, you trade down from 2, you build your team that way, and then you can reassess the position after next season. That I understand why that's attractive to people, but if I'm Joe Douglas, I'm going down with my own guy. It's a no-brainer for me. If there's a quarterback that I fall in love with, I'm going down with my own guy.
That's right. Now, if you love Darnold, okay. But I agree with you. I couldn't agree more. I mean, if you don't succeed here, you'll never get another job as GM again if you're Joe Douglas. I want my guy.
But Dave, let me ask you this question. How could you be in love with Sam Darnold after the 3 years that we've seen him at with the Jets? How could you be in love with him?
I don't know.
Carolina traded 3 draft picks for Sam Darnold, and he wasn't even their plan A this offseason when it comes to quarterback.
No, he's probably like that plan D.
Plan C or D.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't understand how you could be in love with Sam Darnold to the point where you're willing to pass on taking a quarterback with the 2nd overall pick in a quarterback-rich draft. Dave, you're talking about 5 quarterbacks potentially going in the top 10. 5.
This is the move. I think they made the right move. Let's find out what the people are thinking. 800-919-3776. Dave Bayside. Good morning, Dave. You're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, guys. Well said, Chris. I'm glad you said that. I'm very glad Sam's gone. I didn't think he'd play well in 3 years. I'm tired of people saying he had no weapons, because one of those weapons he didn't have, he's going to play again with in Carolina.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson,
fair point.
You're right.
Yeah.
Robbie Anderson. He almost 1,100 yards last year with Teddy Bridgewater throwing him the ball.
So, yeah, but Dave, I mean, here's the thing. Has Sam been good? No, Sam hasn't been good, right? And we expected more with the third overall pick. Everyone was pumped when Mike Maccagnan made that move and we got Sam. He was mismanaged from the beginning with how, I mean, you fired Todd Bowles after year one. Then you bring in Adam Gase, who was a train wreck. But, I mean, the other thing you have to take into account, too, is Sam didn't stay healthy for the 3 years, too, which is a big problem for me.
Nope. He had an issue every single season.
I mean, there are other teams, too. I mean, listen, here's the thing, is when you look at where Sam is at 3 years in and what that would mean financially now, where we have to make a decision on the fifth-year option, which ends up being, you know, close to $19 million now because of the pandemic and everything else. If you go another year with Sam, say you do what the Bears did with Mitch Trubisky, and you see where they're at. Andy Dalton's their starting quarterback. I don't think anyone in Chicago is in love with that move. So
no.
You don't pick up his fifth-year option. You say, okay, let's roll the dice here with Sam and see if he can play. New coaching staff, weapons, he should be better. What happens if he's not? And you're Joe Douglas.
And you're back to square one next year.
Okay, so you wasted this year. And now what are you doing? Are you trading picks?
Now you're in the market for a quarterback when there is probably not a very good quarterback available via the draft.
Okay, so now you're talking about being good in what? In hopefully 3 years? If it doesn't work out with Sam?
Yeah, you're talking about trying to get a new general manager in here to get this thing turned around again. That's what you would be talking about.
This is the ultimate decision for Joe Douglas and this Jets regime, is what they're going to do at quarterback. And they determine, and I think rightfully so, and I've said it from the get-go, to move on from Sam Darnold. I think this is right.
Yeah, but I don't understand, though. There are plenty of teams. I mean, look what teams are doing right now in the NFL. Look what San Francisco's done. They got a quarterback that, I mean, when he's healthy, all he does is win. Got them all the way to the Super Bowl, which they probably should have won. And they're done with Jimmy Garoppolo. Done, all set.
That's
he makes
right.
reasonable money, too. He's not making tons of money. I mean, $25 million for your starting quarterback in this market isn't a ton of money. But he can't stay healthy, so they want to move on. They want to get younger and cheaper at the position. Jared Goff got his team to a Super Bowl. Guess what? We want an upgrade. See ya. Send him to Detroit.
Right. Sam Darnold has been nothing but horrendous. And there's a lot of people defending the fact of, well, let's bring him back and run this through another season.
And I don't understand what you expected. Rich is like, oh, the compensation is okay. What do you mean it's okay? He's done nothing in 3 years. We don't know where he's at mentally. He's been broken down mentally. Can't stay healthy. And oh, by the way, Carolina's going to have to pick up his fifth-year option.
Right. And it's not even like... And you look at this and you say, well, you know, Carolina, they might be okay, but they're not going to be one of the better teams in the NFL. So you're not looking at the 61st pick. You're looking at probably somewhere between, I don't know, 47 and 52. That's a nice piece in next year's draft.
And you reset. It's a fresh start. New coaching staff. GM gets to pick his own quarterback. You reset the money. The Jets needed a fresh start. Sam Darnold needed a fresh start.
I think this is the right
move. This is going to be fascinating to watch these two quarterbacks play out in their respective teams. This is going to be amazing.
Now, do you root against Sam, Rick, or you'll root for him?
No, I can't. No, I feel bad for what
happened
to Sam.
You'll root for him.
Yeah, I mean, up to a certain point. Yeah, I mean, I don't want him to be better than Zach Wilson.
Can you imagine the calls we will get on week 3, Monday morning, if Wilson is awful? And he could be early on in his career, and Darnold goes out there and plays really, really well. Oh, Jets fan will be beside themselves.
Let me ask you guys a question, because the name that's going to come up, I guarantee we'll get phone calls, pro-Sam people that say, watch, Sam will turn into Ryan Tannehill in Carolina. Is Ryan Tannehill, is that what you want your quarterback ceiling to be?
That's not the goal for the third overall pick.
No.
That's not the goal.
No. If you had seen this version of Ryan Tannehill, this version, and I would have told you, You're going to get that with Sam Darnold. Would you have signed for that?
This current version of Ryan Tannehill.
If I said, here it is, this version, AFC Championship game last year, what he did this year, and that's what you're going to get from Sam Darnold. If I would have told you that before you drafted him, or as you're on the verge of drafting him, you would have never taken that.
The Jets fans in the organization might be so desperate, Dave, that they would have settled for that. Ryan Tannehill hadn't been bad. Last couple of years in Tennessee, he hadn't been bad.
Is that what you want, though? Is that what you wanted from Sam Darnold? Hey, this is our quarterback. He's not bad.
Well, if he can, if you're talking about a quarterback that can be in the top 10 with QBR and have our team in the playoffs in consecutive years, yeah, I think Jets fans would have settled for that.
All right, so let me
Jets
throw it to you again.
Jets fans love
then.
Chad Pennington.
Let me throw it to you. Yeah, but Chad Pennington was a guy. He was fine. He wasn't a special
but,
quarterback.
But that's my point, Dave. They love Chad Pennington. They loved him. So, I mean, it's just, you know, Ryan Tannehill is kind of in that same ilk, that same mold. So, I'm just, all I'm saying is this, Dave. The quarterback position has been so bad for the Jets for so long. Like, somebody to come in and be able to stabilize that and to give you competent quarterback play. I mean, Jets fans and the organization have put a huge premium on it. And the fact that they're in this position now to be able to take Zach Wilson, who most draft analysts and most people in NFL circles say is the second best quarterback in this draft, I think that's something to feel good about if you're a Jets fan.
Yeah, but here's the other thing, too, that I think you need to take into account. Because this is my one big thing with Sam Darnold is I don't necessarily know if you can look at what Sam Darnold does now moving forward in Carolina. And it's fair to take that and just say, well, he could have done the same thing here with the Jets.
But you will get that.
No, I know, but I think it's a completely, like, as a former player, I'm telling you, like, the amount of pressure that Sam Darnold would have been under here from the organization and the fan base. Like, that's, like, even Mark Sanchez is like, he's got to get out of there.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, and Mark Sanchez lived it. That's crippling.
Yeah, ain't no pressure in Charlotte.
None.
No, ain't no pressure down here.
No, he gets the reset he needs, and the Jets get the reset that they need.
That's right.
But the most important thing is Sam Darnold gets the coaching that he needs. He's finally going to be around a competent coaching staff, and I thought that was the biggest misstep that the Jets as an organization made while Sam Darnold was here, saddling him with Adam Gase, who is a failed head coach down in Miami, and deciding right after he gets fired by the Dolphins that we're going to hire him to be our head coach and our QB whisperer to try to develop Sam. That was the biggest misstep in all of this. And that's when Chris Johnson did Sam Darnold the biggest disservice.
Horrendous. Horrendous.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
They're on for 4.5 hours, Rick. How many hours of that show would you say you're actually listening to?
Oh, 4.5.
Do you really listen to the entirety of the show? There's never like a 15-minute span where you're not listening?
Well, I mean, it's on. It's on. I mean, it's on the television. I mean, it's am I like focused on it for 4.5 hours? No, but I'm hearing most of the show.
Because every time I watch it, they're like, oh, we got a text from DiPietro. Like, I'm honestly thinking you are glued to it for 4.5 hours.
No, not 4.5. Not glued to it. No, but I mean, I'm doing things around listening to it.
I heard Peter was not very nice to you yesterday.
Oh, what did he say? I didn't even hear it.
I guess you, I don't remember exactly. I guess you texted something.
Oh, yeah.
It about Donnie's. Was not well received.
I thought it was great. They're all crazy. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like Donnie, because K has his, you know, his K army and everything else.
Right.
So they're looking for a name for Don supporters. So they were going back and forth. And I mean, Don's a hockey guy, right? We're not at your level because we don't have our own show and everything.
Well, but, no, I understood. Yeah.
Which is a travesty. But so I said it should be the Donnybrooks. It's a brawling hockey. It's a Donnybrook.
You think Peter knew what that was, though?
No, he had no idea. That's why.
Right.
Because he had no idea what that meant. He thought I meant a stream, is probably what I think.
Like a brook.
An actual brook.
So he took a shot at you yesterday.
Yeah, he took a shot. Because he doesn't like when I'm funny. It bothers him. He's very insecure about it.
Because he's supposed to be the funny guy?
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's
so
what
he's threatened by your comedy?
Why else would he be there?
I don't know.
Wow.
It ain't to talk baseball, I can tell you that.
Wow. So you don't like Peter?
No, I like Peter a lot. You can still like, so you can take shots at someone and still like them.
Mm.
Oh.
That's a lot of smoke coming from you going toward him.
Not as much as Paul, but not as much smoke as Paul Pierce, but close.
That's a lot of smoke.
Yeah, man. Uncle Pete just out here trying to live his best life, man.
Which is fine, but why do you have to publicize it?
I don't know, guys. I have no idea.
Like
this is the age that we're living in, people dry snitching on themselves on social media. I don't get it, but man.
That had a real, Dave, that had a real Rick DiPietro interrogation vibe to it.
Yes, like there was no reason to come forth with what was going on. Hey, guys, just want you to know this is where we're at right now.
Let's call this what it is. You asked me the question, and I actually cheated because I looked on the the rundown.
Oh, look at what has happened. I was so excited. I couldn't believe you did that. I couldn't believe it. I felt like a detective who'd been sitting there with like the smoke and the coffee with you all night long, and finally you're like, fine, you want to know what happened? Here's what happened, all right?
Playing
it was
cop,
me. I did it.
Playing good cop, bad cop, like you leave, and then you send,
that's
your,
right. I
you
leave.
Send
somebody,
your partner
somebody
in.
Comes in, hey, Rick, how are you?
I
come back in.
For you?
Listen, I want answers. You're going to tell me where you were. Other cop comes in. Listen, don't listen to him. He's had a long night. He's going through a divorce. Let's go.
Take it. Take it.
Dino in the Bronx. Dino, good morning. You're on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. Now, just quick thing. Like, I wouldn't expect the Jets to, like, do much because you couldn't protect the number 6 overall pick. And to me, Joe Douglas sounds kind of desperate, so... How do I expect you to protect the number 2 overall pick, you know?
Like
you
have what do you mean, protect?
The Sam was the 3rd overall pick, Dino.
You see, Robin?
Sam was the 3rd overall pick.
Was the 6th overall pick?
No, 3rd.
No, Darnold was 3.
3, okay, I'm sorry. So, you have the 3rd, and he has no protection in the pocket, man. You just got Mekhi Becton. So, now what? Now, what else are you going to do?
I mean, you got to build around the new quarterback, Dino. You're going to have to put an offensive line together. They have a ton, they have a ton of draft capital.
Sounds like he wants to move.
Yeah, but, Dino, I think part of – listen, I agree with what you're saying. They did an awful job of protecting Sam, putting talent around him, coaching staff, everything else. You name it. I mean, there's a list of reasons why Sam didn't have success in the 3 years. But I think you also have to take into account why I would make this decision if I was Joe Douglas, is because when I look at the landscape of the AFC East this upcoming season, even if the team is better and the coaching staff is better and everything else, we're still probably, not even probably, we're the 4th best. I mean,
it's not close.
Oh, I don't think it's even close.
It's not even close.
So now all of a sudden, I mean, if that's the case, then you have another season where, I mean, does it look better? Yeah, it probably looks better, but you're still last in your own division. I mean, and now I'm faced with paying my quarterback, you know, $19 million for what? For what reason?
And you want to blame Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas has been on the job for one real year. 1 year. So you're right. Did he surround Sam with a lot of talent in that 1 year? No. But I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. If you don't believe in Joe Douglas, then this whole thing is going to fail. If he's not good, you're going to reset this thing in 3 or 4 or 5 years and start from scratch again if he's not good.
Yeah, but I think it's clear, Dave, from here moving forward, this is all on Joe Douglas.
I agree.
Like, there's nobody else to blame. This is not Adam Gase. This is not Mike Maccagnan and having to clean up that mess. This is all on Joe Douglas. This offseason, he made the decision to fire Gase, and he ends up hiring Rob Saleh to be his new head coach. He made the decision to move on from Sam Darnold, who was Mike Maccagnan's pick. He's going to draft Zach Wilson. So now these are his people, the guys that he puts in place moving forward. If this doesn't work out over the course of the next couple of years, if it doesn't look like it's trending in the right direction, then I think the Jets are going to be forced to be in a position to find a new general manager. But, I mean, again, if you trust Joe Douglas, if you liked his pedigree, if you like what he's done so far in terms of his approach in dealing with, you know, the Jamal Adams situation and his overall football philosophy and how he wants to build a team – then you should feel good about where the Jets are at. They got plenty of draft picks. They got plenty of cap space to make this team better.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, where Sam was, I mean, I don't know if here in New York, under the kind of scrutiny, under the kind of pressure, like he wasn't going to get any benefit of the doubt.
No.
He got off to a poor start.
Week one, he would have been under the microscope. Week one.
And I don't care how long your contract is. Joe Douglas signed a long-term deal. You can't afford to just keep burning years.
No. And then there's the matter of the opportunity cost with the number 2 overall pick, Rico. Like, I mean, what that guy turns into matters. And if you're Joe Douglas, did you have enough belief in what Sam could be in order to pass on that guy? And the answer was clearly no.
No. And he was never going to. Let's go to mid-swim. He jumps out of the pool, calls the show. Ira Staten Island. Good morning, Ira.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, Chris and Rick. Listen, I think Douglas, under the circumstances, if the market dried up, Carolina pretty much was the only team left, and I think he did good. To get a 2-4 for next year, they throw in a 6 for this year. I think he gets the most value that he could right now. We all talked about it for months. I'm relieved it's done. He's going to a fresh start. I wish Sam well. I think he's going through a good situation. We'll see if he could ever get more than a middle-range quarterback. Like, that's why I think he is. He's middle of the road, and I think he could play better, but I don't think he's ever going to get to that top 10. And so it gets going forward, Chris, you're 100% right. Now it's the bullet is on, the target is on Douglas. You know, everything going forward now is going to be whether he makes it or breaks it. And it's either going to, he's going to do very well in New York, or he's going to be looking for a job in 2 years. I'm going to look optimistic. I think the approach is the right way. And I'll ask all three of you this question. Listen, they have a lot of holes they have to fill. They have 21 picks over the next 2 years. But going into this draft, okay, with the 23rd and the 34th pick, I was leaning a little towards corner because I thought that was the biggest need. But looking at the situation now, you could get yourself a corner with the 34th pick. You can get yourself a corner in the third round. But with that 23rd pick, to make life easier, if Zach Wilson wins the starting job, whoever they bring in to compete with, you got to get yourself a big-time running back. And I think if Najee Harris or Etienne are sitting there, I think you have to help the quarterback or draft one of those two players.
Ira, I think the most important thing with helping this quarterback is making sure that you upgrade the offensive line. And so, you know, with that first-round pick, that's the direction that I would be leaning toward. After you take care of the business of Zach Wilson, you got to find some offensive line help. You need more talent on that group. Mekhi Becton was a good start, but it's just a start. You could be served upgrading the other four spots on that offensive line. And with the quarterbacks being pushed up to the top of this draft, that means that position players, offensive linemen included, are going to be pushed down a little bit. I think the Jets will be in a good spot with that 23rd overall pick to get a big-time offensive lineman. And here's the thing. You got enough draft capital over the course of the next couple of years. If you've got to move up into the teens to get an offensive lineman that you really, really like, so be it. But you got to make sure that you don't put this kid, Zach Wilson, in the same position that Sam Darnold was in.
Yeah, it's too bad Dave Gettleman's not our GM. We could have just taken that running back with the second overall.
Here we go. Here we go. You always got to take shots. We're sitting here. We're trying to analyze. We're doing our best. I'm glad you're tired. I'm glad you didn't sleep.
No, but I mean, how similar is the situation, though? I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, when the year the Giants had the second overall pick, right, was the year that the Jets drafted Sam Darnold.
Rico,
Chris, go back. Remember what that conversation was about that draft.
Oh yeah,
and then what the following year's draft was going to be like.
Oh yeah,
it's the same conversation we're having now.
It's the same conversation, but here's the thing, though, Rico. I mean, how you take a running back in a draft where you have five quarterbacks go in the first round is beyond me. I don't know how anybody defends that decision today.
Please, can we not?
No, seriously, Dave, I didn't bring it up. Rico brought it up. How do you defend
that decision?
He brought
it up because he wants to deflect.
No, I'm not deflecting. I'm trying to get in the heads of people that said you should trade back and keep Sam because we can just, you know, the quarterback, we just address it next year. If Sam doesn't work out, we just address it next year in the draft.
Because you've been addressing it for 50 years.
Next year might not have a Zach Wilson. Next year might not have a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance or a Mac Jones. Next year might not have that guy.
And you've been addressing it forever. I mean, you haven't had a really good quarterback in 50 years.
No, this is it. This is it. We have to
push it down the road.
No, this is it. If this one doesn't work out,
then what?
We got to just come to the realization we can't do it. We're not good at it, and
give up.
No, not give up. But we let other teams develop our quarterback, and then we'll trade for
trade three first round draft picks for a quarterback.
Exactly.
trade three first round draft picks for Russell Wilson.
That wouldn't be a terrible trade. Let's go to Lonnie in Harlem. Good morning, Lonnie.
Good morning, family. How are we today on a Tuesday?
I'm not very good, Lonnie. I think you know the answer to that question.
We're very good.
Family. You should know
that.
Yeah,
Rico, I'm sorry about that. You definitely stayed up for no reason. But, Dave, I just want to say I apologize for yesterday. Okay?
Maybe.
I hope I'm not dead to you, Dave. I really don't.
I was hurtful. It was hurtful what you did for no reason, just taking shots all over the place. But I do like you very much, so I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt.
I had to do my co-host duties, you know. Ricky and Canty get on you enough. I had to get on you at least one day. Okay?
He doesn't get on him. I can tell you that.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
That's game one.
That's great.
You know,
you're a
so
great guy.
Far, the
I wonder if they have a cubicle in hell for you, or if they your own room, or if they special quarters, or how exactly this is going to play out.
I'll be one of his. They'll probably put me in the writing room. I'll be in the writing room.
Yeah, you're in the Letterman room. All right, if we need somebody to come up with a sketch, a little bit, let's have Rick. There he is.
Oh my Lord, Rico. Yeah, you got to stop. But Mets game one, you know, it was the same result. I really feel bad for DeGrom. He came out dealing as usual. He even batted in the run. And yet he only got one other run support. And that's terrible. And then May came in and basically just blew the game. The national championship game, Rico, like you said, terrible. It was a laugher. I mean, the Bears came out on the hunt for Bulldogs, and they got the win. And it was, I just wish it was a better game, more competitive. I mean, Gonzaga tried their best, but that bit, like Jay Williams said, those Baylor guards, I mean, my Lord, they was all.
Mitchell is awesome. Mitchell is, thanks for the call, Lana. We got to run. Mitchell is an awesome, awesome player. He brings it every single possession.
Yeah, they were too much. They had no answer for that.
No, they couldn't. They were not defended like that the entire season.
No.
What they saw was something they hadn't seen the entirety of the year. All right, I guess let's get into the Mets. It's one game, and you don't want to get too crazy, and we said the same thing to the Yankees fans over the weekend and yesterday morning, but God, I mean, he was so good. He was filthy. You should have had more than a two-run lead, and in typical Mets fashion, the bullpen comes in and blows this game, and they lose it by the score of 5-3.
You know what's amazing with both teams? And I felt like we were having the exact same conversation after the first Yankees game. Is like all the things that you were concerned about as a Yankees fan.
Yep, reared their ugly heads.
And that was exactly what happened last night with the Mets. Jacob DeGrom pitches great. Actually responsible for driving in one of the two runs. Mm-hmm. No run support. Defense was actually really good. Until it wasn't. Until at the end when it wasn't.
Well, they put in Guillorme as a defensive replacement.
And McCann's just got to take his medicine there and just make that play. Just catch the ball. I don't need you stretching out. Just catch the ball. Like let's avoid further damage. And that's not what happened.
It was a terrible throw, though.
No, it was not a great throw, but it wasn't so awful where he couldn't have caught it. Like, even if he had to get off home for a second to catch it and then
and
step back
on
home, he wasn't going to turn two.
Fair enough. Okay. But it wasn't a good throw.
No, it was not a great throw, especially because you brought him in as a defensive replacement. You're 100% right. But the fact that they took Jacob DeGrom out after 77 pitches. Now, he didn't seem to have a problem with it after the game. I guess it would be hard for me to have a problem with it because Jacob DeGrom doesn't have a problem with it. I guess that was part of the plan because of the, you know, things getting all screwed up with COVID and everything else in Washington. But to have your two shiny new toys, I mean, when our biggest concern with the Mets was the bullpen and have our two new shiny toys go out there and pitch the way that they pitched.
Oh, my God. May was awful. And then I knew that they were going to lose this game. When Loop hit Harper, the second he hit him, and he didn't graze him,
no,
he full out hit him. The second he hit him, I was like, they're gonna lose this game, and I had no doubt. But you're right. I mean, you know, another loss for DeGrom, or loss in a game that he starts, and he's sensational. He's hitting 102 last night. He's as good as he's ever been, and to go out there and to have the bullpen do that yet again. And again, it's only game one, Chris, but that is like that's a blow to the gut last night.
Dave, I just don't know what else Jacob DeGrom has to do. I don't know, man.
Pitch all nine.
The guy's got two hits. He's got an RBI. Like, he brings his own offense. I mean, he goes out there. He gives you six innings of scoreless baseball. Only allows three hits. I mean, he's phenomenal. He's the best pitcher in baseball. And to have the bullpen blow another save, Dave. Like, I don't know where you go from here. Like, this is the 31st time the Mets bullpen has blown a win for Jacob DeGrom. Mm. 31st time. And since 2018, Jacob DeGrom has given you 8 starts, 6 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, and it comes up on the losing end.
You can't make stuff like that up.
I don't understand it, Dave. We said that the bullpen was going to be an issue. It was an issue last year. It was an issue the year before that. And quite frankly, I don't know where the Mets turn in terms of being able to fix it. But clearly, they're going to have to make a move. Like, I know it's only one game, but this is bad, Dave. This is bad. And it's unfortunate because you're not going to be able to take full advantage of having a weapon like Jacob DeGrom every fifth day. The bullpen is going to be an adventure every single time they go out there.
It always is.
Yeah, but not those two guys. I mean, May was not supposed to look the way he looked last night.
He was dreadful.
It was horrendous. So I told you before the show I had a DeGrom stat. So I got this last night.
This is going to upset me, isn't it?
When I stayed up way too late. So over the last three seasons, DeGrom's made 77 starts. In those 77 starts, he's got 25 wins. His ERA in those wins is 1-1-1. 1-11 is his ERA in those 25 mm-hmm. wins. Games he did not win, which means no decision or losses, which was 52 games, his ERA is 2-5-8. and he is 0-19. He can't win with a 2.58
ERA.
I mean, what are we doing? I don't know what it is about him. I don't know what it is about his starts.
Yeah, I don't know.
For some reason.
I don't know. It's such a terrible game, too. I mean, having Guillorme with that throw and McCann not making the play, and they had so much. You know what the thing is? The game should have been over. They had so many chances earlier in that game to blow it open so many different times that they came up short.
Yeah, the base is loaded. I mean, Pilar hits into the double play.
Ugh. And I know you have an issue with this, but I don't need Pilar leading off. I'm not booing him. I'm not saying he's an awful player. I don't need Kevin Pilar in the leadoff spot.
It's game one.
I get it.
You should relax a minute. Just relax for one quick second. I mean, last night was not great.
No.
The double play was unfortunate.
That third inning, too, when Conforto grounded out the second. Like, that's one of those you wish you could have back, too.
They had so many opportunities.
Yeah.
But that's what they are. I mean, listen, you didn't have Lugo. That's obviously a loss. I guess Betances is just not a guy you feel confident in a high-leverage situation, right?
Well, this is two guys you brought in. I mean, May was one of your big offseason signings.
Was your big acquisition in the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, those are the two guys. I mean, and then you bring in Loop because he's, I mean, lefty against lefty. Almost threw it behind Bryce Harper. I mean,
that might have been better.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, this is, it's amazing that you had the Yankees in the first game and now the Mets in their first game. And it's like the things that would concern you the most is what you saw.
Yeah, but I feel like Murphy's this is law? One of the, Rico, the difference is I feel like this is one of those legit things, if you're a Mets fan, that you can panic about.
Yeah, but the saving grace is that if it was a normal situation, like DeGrom's at 77 pitches through six, mm-hmm. the way he was pitching, he's going to go at least one more inning.
Yeah, and you're going to get Seth Lugo back eventually, so that can help you with the back end of your bullpen. But still, man, I just think that throughout the course of this season, that bullpen is going to be an area of concern. And you thought you had it fixed with being able to add Trevor May to the group that you already had there, but I mean, I'm anticipating that Trevor May will be a lot better than what we saw last night.
Well, he better be.
But, I mean, how good can this bullpen actually be? Like, that has been a question mark all offseason long, even with that addition.
Yeah. I don't think you felt at all comfortable with the second DeGrom left that game last night.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.